You're listening to the Ice Warrior Podcast. Welcome back to the Ice Warrior Podcast.
Episode 2.
We made it to the second episode. I'm Gunnar Stern. I'm your host, and along with me is my beautiful fiance again, Macy. Macy, how are you today?
I'm doing good. It snowed about 6 inches last night, so that was really exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking outside, and there's like lots of fluff around. I was out there walking a little bit, and it puts you in the mood to be on a snowmobile, which is what we're planning on doing maybe later tomorrow.
Yeah, hopefully.
Welcome back to the Ice Warrior Podcast.
Episode 2.
We made it to the second episode. I'm Gunnar Stern. I'm your host, and along with me is my beautiful fiance again, Macy. Macy, how are you today?
I'm doing good. It snowed about 6 inches last night, so that was really exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking outside, and there's like lots of fluff around. I was out there walking a little bit, and it puts you in the mood to be on a snowmobile, which is what we're planning on doing maybe later tomorrow.
Yeah, hopefully.
That'd be fun.
And the rest of the weekend, maybe.
Yeah, before we jump full board into racing. And so...
Recap episode 1.
Yeah, first episode I thought went very well. Almost, I didn't look at the exact numbers, but we were closing in on like 200 downloads, which is like...
In a week.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks, but yeah, it was like most of them were in the first week, so it was like, it was really awesome seeing that many people listening. And there were people from like, it was mostly Midwest, but there was a couple people from like Arizona, and
Washington.
There was one in... Yeah, there was one guy that listened like 15 times from Washington.
So that's you. Thanks for listening to
Stevenson
us.
Lake or something. I don't know who that is, but they really liked that podcast. He's making up a good majority of the downloads there. And there was one from like even like the Philippines or something I saw, which was like crazy. So
he was probably just on vacation.
Maybe, yeah. There was one. There's quite a few from... From Illinois, which was nice to see. And then there's also quite a few from Wausau that I saw. A lot of Macy's friends were downloading. And I got a lot of messages from people, too, on Instagram and Facebook. And people, you know, thought that it was a good idea to start this, and they were definitely interested. And some people thought I should bring on some guests that we should talk to, which is maybe the next episode. I'm trying to think of a good guest. So if you guys have any ideas...
as far as guests.
Yeah, so. People you want to talk to or even topics you want to talk about. The topic we have today, I think, is a good one. It's what everyone's kind of been talking about the past year or so. So we'll get to that a little bit later. But, yeah.
So season update. Eagle River registration is now open, right?
It is, yeah. I think so. I haven't registered yet, but I'm thinking it's open. I have been by the racetrack a couple times this past week, and it's been they've been working on it. And I have a couple guys that drove by there yesterday, and they were saying they were putting ice down. So they definitely are. It's been cold enough for them to put some ice down, so we should have a decent track. I know the vintage guys always tear it up, you know, the weekend before, so. I'm thinking, since there's just going to be less racers in general, with a lot of Canadians not being here, and it seems like a lot of people are maybe just taking the year off, maybe the track will be in a little bit better shape when we get there by Derby Week, Modern Weekend. I'm hoping. It seems like it's okay for a day, and then the ice set was like on that they made on top of the bumps before just kind of doesn't bond well, so the bumps that were either from vintage weekend just kind of show up again. It's kind of like when you pour concrete like on top of a crack, like the crack just kind of like goes into the new concrete. So it's kind of like, you know, what the bumps that were that happened or started to become in Vintage Weekend, they kind of show up in Modern Weekend.
Yeah, shave.
Yeah, I mean,
shave it. They don't got a shaver.
They do have a shaver there. They use it. I don't know who actually has it. It's either USSA or the Derby. They do have a shaver there. And they do, I mean, every track we go to is always different. Some tracks, they have, like, a rotating grinder. So they kind of, like, try and, like, pick out the bumps. Like, Velcourt, I know, was doing that last year. They were, like...
Eganville,
it's actually the guy, every night... After we were done racing, he would do laps around the track and work his way out, and he would grind the whole track all the way out. And in the morning, it was a lot smoother.
It would take hours.
He was out there for a long time. This was like, we were done racing at like pretty late Friday night, and he was out there.
It was like
10. We were done racing like 10 or 11 or something, and he was out there in like till 12 or 1. And it was smooth the next day, but it got rough again. And they had a lot of ice there, though. They didn't have any troubles. They never have trouble making ice, just being way up there. So,
yeah,
they never
later race too. So,
yeah, that too. So, these always these earlier tracks, they always have a little bit of difficulty. So it's we'll see when we get there. It's always I haven't looked at the weather yet, but I'm hoping it's going to be just some decent temps. You know, not too cold, not too warm. That's best. That's what
best
we need
scenario.
Right now. Yeah, I think. When it's too warm, the racing's crap, and then it's too cold, the fans never show up. So we just need a weekend that's just like perfect. We could all use that. So along with that, Eagle River still going on, Wausau is still going on, and then there is a second date for the second Eagle River race. It's in the end of February, I believe, February 20 something. It's gonna be that weekend. So those are the three races. Since we've recorded the last podcast, the Sioux has been canceled.
Yep.
I kind of had some plans in the works about possibly finding a ride for that with a team that races at the Sioux. But since they canceled that, that's kind of gone up in the air. So won't be doing that. So I was trying to get a little bit of racing in, a little bit more racing in, but that didn't happen. So we're stuck to just three races and a bunch of trail riding, probably.
Which isn't a bad thing either, because I mean, at least you're enjoying the snow.
That's true. If it snows. Mm-hmm. If it keeps snowing. It snowed a lot, but yeah, it has to keep snowing. So yeah, so it's again, that's been an awesome reaction to the first podcast, and we're hoping to keep these going every weekend now. We should get another one out maybe before Eagle River, maybe like a pre or maybe even do one from the track, maybe like Wednesday night right before qualifying. I think qualifying is again on Thursday. I haven't actually looked at the schedule. I should probably do that. And
practice is just Thursday.
Well, yeah, maybe after practice we'll do one, since we don't have much going on, and you know, we have tech. I think probably sometime after before practice, so
yeah.
We can probably fit one in there, either from the cabin or from the racetrack. Maybe we can find a guest. Maybe Mike will join us. I doubt it, but maybe we can talk him into.
You'd have to give him a few beers first.
Yeah, if you don't know Mike, he's not quite the talker, but you get him a couple of Budweisers in him, he talks a little bit more. Not saying he's Chatty Cathy, but he does open up a little bit.
Does talk it normally. Yeah.
So before we kind of transfer into the main discussion for this podcast, I wanted to start incorporating a lot of our sponsors, my sponsors, into these podcasts. Just, you know, just to kind of give them a little bit more recognition, especially this year with there only being three races. I want, you know, to they a lot of them have given a lot of the same support that they have in years past, which is awesome with only being three races. So I'm trying to try my hardest to try and keep up my end of the deal and give them as much recognition as they deserve. So I thought this week we just start right at the top, you know, and just recognize Red Bull and how great of us, you know, just a partner and a sponsor, and just how great of a company they've honestly been for me.
And for all their athletes, really, if you look at it across the board,
they really are. Yeah, it's like,
what do you need?
They do. If I ask them for more than just Red Bull, there's something that they're always asking me whatever I need, you know. And it's hard for me to come up with stuff that I do need, but if I ever do need something, they're always, you know, willing to try and get that for me. And they're always coming up with new ideas, new creative ideas to like try and get some cool projects going. We had a couple lined up for this spring, which had me doing some traveling to some faraway places, but I don't know if that's still gonna happen. We'll have to with the whole COVID thing, you know, travel restrictions have been kind of out the door. So, well, maybe when this all blows over, we have to get back on that and get another cool project. We had this one we were talking about, and it was pretty cool, and it involved someone that is more well known than me. I'll tell you that, especially overseas. Really well known. I don't think I even told you who that was, Macy.
Probably not.
You probably wouldn't know who they are. They are another racer, pretty well known racer. Yeah, but this Red Bull is really, since I signed with them, and I really don't like saying sign with them because it's kind of like it makes it too like official sounding to me. Like I'm like some sort of like super like professional like. Corporate like sponsored racer, and I don't really see myself that way, and I don't see like my relationship and with them with Red Bull being that way. It's like my there's a couple guys over there that I communicate with, and one guy, my athlete manager, he's, you know, always been there, and we have a real great relationship, and it's just the story of how we kind of came together is real organic and really it's not like your typical, like he was out there looking for somebody to sponsor, and like it just happened to be, you know, like me. Like it's the way that it happened was my sister actually, I think I told the story on another podcast.
Yeah, I think you did.
But my sister actually worked for a company that sold pretzels. It's called Pretzel Chris, and her part of her job was like marketing. And promoting to different, like, just like sampling also to different companies. And somehow she got into the Red Bull office downtown Chicago. And then she somehow met the athlete manager at the time, who's my athlete manager now. His name's Brent. And I don't know what actually happened. There was some sort of communication. Yeah.
And
it was like. Next thing I know, I got a call from him, and he's just saying, you know, like, hey, we're keeping an eye on you, and, you know, it's definitely what you're doing, and we're just trying to learn more about your sport and yourself, and he kind of gave me some tips to get, you know, boost up my social media game, which was a little bit lacking at the time.
A lot.
It wasn't too bad. I mean, it was mostly just Facebook orientated. I didn't really have anything else going on, and it wasn't, like, super directed towards, like, what I do, and he kind of made it... He kind of gave me some tips to make it more more professional looking and just kind of like more like direct on who I am and like what sponsors want to see out of someone when they sponsor them. And it wasn't like super like direct, you know, it wasn't like super like do this. It was just like some like informal tips.
Tips and tricks.
Right. And then just kind of grew over time. And he definitely gave me some product to make sure, you know, that we love Red Bull and we go through it. We definitely drink a lot of Red Bull, which is, you know, it does help me a lot. It's like, especially at the racetrack, I'm like the worst at like eating food. I can never like actually give myself like, because I'm never hungry, it seems like. So anything I can get in my stomach is good, and Red Bull helps.
Crackers.
So yeah,
that's got a nice diet at the racetrack.
I've been conscious about eating more. I'm better at it now than I was when I was a little bit younger. I don't know why. It's just kind of like those, like, if it's the nerves or if it's just my stomach telling me I'm just not hungry, but it's...
Too busy to think about eating.
Yeah, too, sometimes. Yeah.
So, all thanks to Jimmy.
Really? There's some thanks to my sister. Yeah. A little bit.
A little bit. A right. lot.
I mean, it's the foot in the door, but, I mean, it just gets you the foot in the door. It doesn't get yourself in the door. So, yeah, so...
So moving on to, like, the main topic for this podcast, champ versus F3, right? Is that what we're going with?
That's what I think people want to talk about right now. That's kind of, like, when this whole thing changed from champs to F3s, or from actually from champ to 440 to pro champ, and then the whole champ versus F3 thing. So I guess we should probably, like,
explain the classes, because right. everyone's like, what's pro champ?
I still get questions from people, like, what is this? What class is this? What class is that? And it is extremely confusing, and the naming, the identification of these classes is horrible, and I honestly, like, it's bad. Like, pro champ, champ 440, like, and F3, they don't like explain the class well, or the progression of classes or anything like that. Like, pro champ and pro light, if you don't like, pro light is the class below pro champ, that kind of makes sense, right? Like, that's a lot of other motorsports name their classes that way. Like, the light class is always like the lower class, yeah. or semi pro, right? So that makes sense, but
it's like the Saturday night,
right? So I guess so. The class we've been racing since like 2000s, you know, early 2000s, has always been Champ 440, mm-hmm. but a lot of people called it Pro Champ throughout that time.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this is Champ 440. Like, a lot of people called it Champ or Pro Champ or you know, Champ 440. Yeah, it's like they had a bunch of names, and then that class. So what that class was, you know, the modified engine, completely modified. So there were less restrictions on what you could do to the engines. There were still some, and then the chassis also had some less restrictions to what we're racing now. So a lot of those restrictions, a lot of stuff.
It was
less
structured of a class. It was kind of like,
right.
You can modify this. You can modify that.
It was open. The rule book was a bit more open, and they made the change from that class to what we're racing now. What we started racing last year,
which is called Pro Champ.
Right, now they made that class called Pro Champ. It's a new class, but they made it a name that we've been calling the old class. So that's why it's really confusing to people. So, and that class is now just a stock engine with very few modifications. You can't do it really anything to the engine itself. You can have pipes. You can build pipes for it. And then they also took away some modifications we could do with the chassis. In the track, there's no exotics, no carbon fiber, no titanium. Mm-hmm. And then they got rid of the traction control devices that some teams were starting to use. And that's all in an attempt to make the class cheaper. That is it. And another intent was to allow people that race the Pro Light class to then also race Pro Champ. Because mm-hmm. then their sleds would be
able to race both.
Right. They always were able to, but they'd be competitive now. Right. And some people did. Some people, I don't know what it is, but they didn't want to race the Pro Champ class, even though it's like, it would be just as competitive. It's literally the same exact sled as being Pro Champ and Pro Light, but they still aren't racing Pro Champ. Like if I were a younger racer, say 18 to 20 or something, you know, and I was racing Pro Light, I would want to be racing in the Pro Champ class. Like, it's like just natural for me to want to be racing at the top level.
You'd rather be not doing as well than winning.
That's always been my mindset since I started racing. I never wanted to race. Like, even when I started racing, I didn't want to spend any time in semi-pro champ at all. I wanted to be racing in the pro class, like, since the start. Like, even when I turned 16, like, I wanted to be in the pro class. Even if I was not making the final, even if I was, like, getting dead last every single time, like, that was more exciting. That was more meaningful for me to be racing in the pro champ class. And I just don't see that out of, like, a lot of these new racers. I don't know. I'm not going to say specifically people, but it's just a general consensus I see of people not wanting to race into the class. And it's like I've heard people say like, "Oh, we're just fine with racing, you know, in pro life, you know." And it's like, okay, maybe some people are like that. I'm not throwing shade or anything, but you would think people would just want to race in the class.
Well, is there a...
the pro class.
Is there, like, something... Because there used to be stipulations in place where if you would win...
There was.
You'd have to step up.
I don't know if those were ever enforced. I really didn't pay much attention. I think sometimes they were. I can name a couple guys that were forced to race pro champ. Yeah. I don't know if that's still a case. I don't know if it is. If it is, that's a good thing. But then they're going to lose numbers. They don't have the numbers to replace the people in pro light. So, right? Because if someone wins all three races, he races pro champ. The next guy's going to win three races, he races pro champ.
It's basically still the same class.
So that kind of all goes down to the structure of the classes, getting people to fill these voids in the classes, moving up.
And I do feel like some of the tracks don't even offer pro light. It's just one class combined, depending on numbers.
Right. Which is, you know, probably better off. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard right now with the numbers being low to have so many classes. And that's another topic that we could talk about is like the whole class structure in itself. Personally, I think there's way too many classes.
So just to recap for a second, we have Pro Champ, which is stock 440, less modifications, the newer class. This is what they've been racing the last year?
Last year was the first year.
Yes. And that is what the, you know, WC was. That's what Belfort was. That's what...
it's just been the premier class.
Premier class, yeah. Basically right. Replaced Champ 440. And then we have Champ 440, which is mod motors.
That class does not exist anymore.
And so when you're talking about Champ 440, I mean, it was relevant. It was... We did race at one track, I believe. Right.
They offered it last year.
Eganville, right?
Right.
Yeah, so Eganville offered it one or two days, but that was it. Because of the fact that it's so hard to have, you know, a stock motor in one of your sleds and modify in the other and do both and race both classes.
Right.
I felt like a lot of people were just like, well, whatever the money, where the money is or where the premier class is technically listed as, we're going to race that.
Yep. Yeah.
So, and then we have F3.
Right. So F3 is a whole new class. If you don't know what F3 is, F3 is, it starts off, you have to race a stock snowcross style sled. So 600. Either, a, yeah, 600cc. So we either a Ski-Doo RS or the Polaris snowcross sled. I don't know about RCAT. I don't know. But so you have to start with that sled, and it has to, you can make modifications to, you know, the front suspension, A-arms, and skis, and shocks.
Basically to lower it to the track.
Right. To make these sleds more capable of racing on ice in an oval. You know, there is modifications you can make, but there you cannot touch engine modifications. So you're basically, it's like trying to make a snowcross sled be able to race on an oval, but don't make any modifications, anything else to it. So, like, a lot of the chassis has to stay stock. You can't be cutting into the chassis too much. So it's pretty regulated class, and that's also in an attempt to make things more accessible for new racers and cheaper. And I've always said this, like, you can try and make classes cheaper, but people are going to spend as much money as they feel willing to spend on classes, even if you make them as regulated as possible. Like in our case, I don't know how much cheaper it was, but it probably was not much in building our F3 sled last year, and that's just the truth. It probably was cheaper in the long end, but
time, effort,
right,
money to
well, being the first year,
how to chop those sleds down.
Yeah, being the first year is hard.
I mean, especially for, like, I feel like, you know, you and Travis were the only two that really had Ski-Doos, right? Everyone else was racing.
Oh, there was a couple other guys.
Oh, Steven Markey did.
Yeah, Steven, and there's a Joe Schwartz who tried it a couple races, and then a couple Mira guys, I think, had a Ski-Doos that also raced. But, so...
It's a brand new class. You're still trying to figure out how to make it work.
I get the intent of it, and I know why it was brought up and why they're trying to push it so hard and making this the premier class, because F3 was supposed to be the premier class for the WC this year, but they backtracked on that.
Because they didn't have enough entries, right?
They were a decent amount, but not a lot, no. But I felt like they thought the Pro Champ class had enough numbers for them to keep it going for one more year. But I do think the long-term change is going to come to F3. I know why. It makes sense in a lot of ways.
It looks more like a manufacturer sled that you would see on the trail.
Well, the manufacturers want to see their sleds on the ice, right?
Yeah.
And to get the manufacturer support, that's what they're going to want to see. Back in the day when the sleds were more capable of racing on ovals, when the sleds were not as, like, on steroids like they are now to go up on over, like, to go on jumps. Like, the sleds back then were a little bit easier to build, and people were more willing to do it, but the sleds now are just, they're a lot harder to build that to make it happen. They do. Some of the sleds, they look like, compared to, like, sleds back in, like, the 90s and, like, 2000s, like, the sleds now just look crazy.
I feel like you're so much higher up, too. I don't know if that's just me, like, thinking that, but, like, when you ride a sled now, I feel like you're riding a horse.
Well, I think
you're not, like, just bebopping around on your little, you know.
And they got these big paddle tracks on them now and the longer tracks, and it's, like, the suspensions are, they're so much higher, so.
It's crazy.
But, you know, a lot of this stuff that I know why they switched from, you know, why this the F3 class was brought about. One of the big things that why F3 was brought up was because that it doesn't get talked about ever is because there are no they do not make 440 sleds anymore. They have not made them for quite a while, and we're still racing 440 sleds. And because of that, parts have become literally unavailable. I'm not saying like, oh, there's like some, no, there are no new parts, none. And I know that by, like,
keyword new.
New, right. There are no new parts available for the premier class, engine parts for the 440 class. I can guarantee you that.
And then you always have those people who argue, like, oh, there's all these old parts out there, but it's a premier class. You don't see NASCAR going out there racing a used stock car that they bought from, like, 2000 and 2005. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Why should we be racing in a class that's, like, using, like, then the race becomes, like, who can find the parts on eBay,
like,
right?
Competition. Yeah, whoever's going to spend the most money on the bidding war.
Right, like, who is like, oh, I found this. Like, and that person then ends up being good because they have parts. And, like, people, like, say, oh, used parts are just as good as new parts. Do you want our premier class to become that, like you said? Like, we should not be having to, like, we should be wanting our sport to want to include the manufacturers, not exclude them. And I this is why I see, you know, the F3 being the class that it gets switched to.
And I mean, you also have to think, like, the manufacturers, they're the backbone of the entire sport. Like,
right.
You need to be doing something for them.
Right.
You know, they're supporting you, they're giving you discounts on products, they're sending you money, they're doing this, they're doing that, they're supporting these tracks.
And it's just easy. It's the first year it's hard, but over time, the sleds, the F3s, I see them being easier to build. And I do see them becoming, as long as we're working with the manufacturers more, like, I've had a lot of, you know, they seem interested in our class every time I've talked to Skidoo, and they are definitely, you know, wanting the class to grow. This year has been an outlier just because of what happened with the COVID. But I felt like if we had a regular year going on here, like, we could have made some progress on,
in the correct direction.
Yeah, and, like, there has to be some sort of, like, goal or direction for the sport. And I don't know. It's hard. Everyone, there's goods and bads of both classes, right? The Champ 440 or the Pro Champ class is what people are comfortable with. There's chassis out there that are available.
Everyone loves it.
Yeah, the racing is, like, you know, you can't beat it.
And it's really hard, I feel like, to tell the difference between, you know, unless you really know what you're really, really looking at, a difference between a Pro Champ and the old modified Champ 440s.
You would have no idea.
Yeah, you unless you like are like full on like super no. fan, and you track people's times and figure
the
that
end
out,
result is not. What, a couple miles an hour? We were like 3 or 4 miles an hour slower at Beaujolais, I think.
But you're already almost hitting 100, 100, you know,
yeah.
300.
No, I agree that there probably should have been a change from the Champ 440 class to a cheaper intent on Pro Champ. So it seems like now where do we go from here? Do we stick with the Pro Champ class and try and make that? But, like, I don't see that happening, like, parts are like, there are no parts. Like, how can we make that happen? It's just not possible. Mm-hmm. So, I guess my kind of opinion, this might be a good, you know, alternative is to somehow work in the 600 engine, 600 power plant into a more Champ style chassis.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some complications with that because you can't just buy a 600 Snowcross engine. Like, it's just not possible to like just buy one from Ski-Doo. They don't sell them without the sled because with the way the ECU works, they work with the sled, something like that. So it would be some complications with that, but somehow I feel like getting, you know, working the 600 motor into a Champ style chassis would maybe be a new option. And USSA had a meeting about this last spring, not this past spring, but the spring before, when all these changes were kind of going down. And, you know, that was kind of our vote into it. And a lot of other racers were, because they did have that class. They had a 600 factory 600 class in a Champ chassis, and they said that the sleds went way too fast. But there's always a way to slow down. There's always a way to slow sleds down. That's kind of my thought on it. So if we had like a 600 engine that went into a Champ chassis, that would make the racing a little bit better because the sleds are more like made for racing on ovals. And then, you know, maybe we somehow you regulate how these sleds look to make them look more like the manufacturers want, you know?
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you think about that, if you go to that, like the new hood that you designed, was it last year? Last year.
2 years ago. Two summers ago.
Wow. Yeah, so before last season.
Right.
So that is a spitting image of a Ski-Doo hood.
That was like my total intent, right? I want my sled to look like something that's on the trails.
So basically the mold was based off of a design that Ski-Doo already has.
Yeah, my dad and I basically took parts from a Ski-Doo hood and modified it into a new mold that we made so our sled would look like a
trail sled. So then if you look at the track, when you're on the track, there's no doubt in my mind when you look at it and you say, oh, that's definitely a Ski-Doo. You can totally tell. You can look
if you know what a snowmobile, what the brands look like, yes, mm-hmm. you would exactly know mine looks exactly like a Ski-Doo.
Yes, and I know that there's some others that are out there looking, possibly buying, you know,
I get messages a lot of the time. People, you know, want to buy hoods from me. So people are definitely interested in the same sort of thinking. I don't know how, like...
I think John Hinkey, is John Hinkey the one running?
Yeah, he has one.
He's running.
Yep.
And he's Ski-Doo also, so you can totally tell. And I mean, if you were to go out there and look at some of the other ones, if they all were to have the specific, you know, Polaris hood or whatever it may be, because Polaris hoods, I feel like, haven't changed in a couple of years, you would definitely be able to tell. You'd say, oh, it's Polaris right there. Oh, that's Ski-Doo.
Right.
You know, instead of trying to figure it out based on who the driver is, you know, trying to figure out what the number is, trying to figure out the driver. If you're new to the sport, you're not going to know these things.
Yeah, because a lot of people show up to these races that may not even know anybody, but maybe they're a fan of a certain brand, you know, and like that would be easy for them to recognize,
mm-hmm.
for them to get more involved in the sport. If they just see a bunch of like ragged like looking sleds out there in every single color and like every single design, and it's kind of doesn't look great in my eyes. I mean, a lot of those hoods are probably better performance hoods. Like, I get why people use the wall bubble hood. Like, it's the most aerodynamic hood out there. Like, you cannot get a more aerodynamic hood, and that's why people use it.
I don't think a lot of people
Well, they did back in the day. Now, I feel like now not as much, but there is some performance gain to having a hood like that. I mean, it's just science that the, you know, less aerodynamic drag, the faster you're going to go. So it's, you know, that's kind of my, maybe another option I would maybe probably wanted to see, but I do see the F3 class just starting to take over. And I know Craig Marchbank with Eagle River is making a big push for it. He's kind of wanting to see F3 at least get more numbers. So that's kind of,
overall, with that, the other thing too, I don't know if you mentioned, but with the champ class, the pro champ class, another reason why they did kind of dump it and kind of just push it off to the side was there were no engine builders. So if you could find an engine that was new, if keyword, because there aren't any,
yeah. Right.
You don't have anyone to really build. I feel like it's the same person every single time.
There was a handful, and then there's like less, and that means like five or less, you know. So yeah, there was a couple, and a lot of people used the same people, and a lot of people still do in the pro champ class. They are still using, because there is some engine work that can be done to these engines in the pro champ class. So, and I know like almost half the field is probably using the same engine builders. So that's kind of it. And that's the whole champ versus F3 discussion. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to find out what's the best solution to this. So yeah, I don't know the solution, but I'm on board for pretty much whatever works, as long as
we'll stay around.
Yeah, I mean the sport is so unique and so cool, and there are a lot of, it does have a lot of history, and there are a lot of fans out there, and I just want to see it become something more than what it is right now. I feel like there's a high ceiling for the sport, and if that means switching to, you know, F3s, and that's, you know, that's what it is. And but the, you know, the parts and pieces all have to match too. You can't just keep, like I was saying about the parts being available, like that's a big part of it that a lot of people don't understand or maybe have never heard of. Like that's a huge part also. So it's hard finding what's the winning mix, but I guess we just gotta keep trying new stuff here. And this F3 class is a new class, and we're definitely giving our best at it. It's not our full attention. Obviously, we're spending a lot of time in the pro champ class because that's, you know, the premier class for now. But if they do make the change to F3, guess what? Like that's what we're gonna be doing then. So racing the F3 if that's the premier class. So yeah, that's all I pretty much have to say about the whole pro champ F3 discussion.
So now that it's continuing to snow, we're probably gonna go get out and have some fun in the snow. So we will talk to you guys probably maybe next week. I don't know. Maybe we'll bring someone on board and then we'll come back the following week right before Eagle River. Or we'll do something before Eagle River and then something right after. We'll figure it out and what our schedule all entails. Good luck to all of those racing the vintage weekend at the Derby Track. I know there's a lot of people racing both weekends. So good luck to everyone doing that. And then we will hopefully see everyone at the Eagle River Derby, Snowmobile Derby World Championship.
We hope. I mean, I will be there. So it's, yeah. And yeah, people, definitely, if you want us to hear from somebody, give us some ideas of who you want us to talk to, who we think we should bring on the podcast, who you think would be a good guest with some good intel. I have a couple ideas of people. We'll see if they have enough time.
Yeah, so just to kind of recap for dates and stuff, Eagle River is going to be the 15th through the 17th of January. That is the current weekend, I guess. Then the vintage weekend would be the weekend before, the 8th through the 10th. And then we have the WASA 525, which is January 23rd and 24th. I think practice would be on the Friday. So, yeah, if you're not busy any of those weekends, stop on out.
Come out to the track. Bring your sled. Ride your sled out. And hopefully there's some snow. I know there's a little bit of snow in Wausau. They got a wet load, so bring your sled out and off to the track. We'll see you on the next episode.